listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls. W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media
this
app.
This is CBS News on the Hour. Presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Allison Keys in Washington.
Lift every voice.
People have gathered in the nation's capital where the program is started at the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington. Martin Luther King III says this is not just a celebration, and this speaker agrees there is current work to be done.
Books are being rewritten. Teachers and writers are on strike. Students are being gunned down. Racial tension is on a rise, and young people are being silenced. And time is running out.
More than 100 people have been marked safe after a list with the names of hundreds of Maui wildfires victims was released. CBS's Dana Jacobson with the latest.
Officials say the search will take weeks to complete. The death toll stands at 115. Meanwhile, Maui County is suing the power company. The county claims Hawaiian Electric ignored high wind warnings and failed to shut off electricity, which led to downed power lines, posing a fire risk.
More than 300,000 people are still without power in Michigan, Ohio, after deadly storms roared through. Five people were killed and seven tornadoes caused severe damage. Kelly Cass at the Weather Channel tells us Tropical Storm Franklin is on the way.
The European model wants to deliver several inches of rain from Tampa on up towards, say, Tallahassee. The American model, a little bit different placement in terms of the heaviest rain back towards Mobile Bay, the panhandle of Florida. We could get inundated with several inches of rain.
The Spanish Soccer Federation president has been suspended after kissing a player on the lips without her consent. BBC reporter Paul Moss explains.
The ruling is a stern one. Luis Rubiales is not to engage in any football-related activity, national or international. And the fact that FIFA's got involved marks just how serious the conflict is between the Spanish Football Federation on one side and on the other, Jenny Hermosa and her teammates.
It will be a busy week for defendants in that 2020 election conspiracy case against former President Trump. CBS's Scott McFarlane with more.
Monday, D.C. federal judge Tanya Chutkin is expected to set a trial date for special counsel Jack Smith's 2020 election conspiracy case against Trump. Smith requested a trial date of January 2nd, 2024. Trump wants it in April 2026.
Four people were hurt in a shooting at a high school football game in Oklahoma City last night, including a 15-year-old girl. Police are searching for a suspect. In Chicago, two women were hurt in a shooting at a White Sox game last night. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Back to school.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Reports on electric vehicle sales are mixed. Mike Mohn spoke with analysts who say electric vehicle sales trends are encouraging.
Wisconsin has lagged behind other states in electric vehicle registrations, with data showing it ranks 35th in the nation. But the Wisconsin Policy Forum notes that registrations have increased on average by nearly 52% each year over the past decade. As for reports of high inventories, Chris Hardo of Consumer Reports says the estimates exclude EV-only dealers and that their inventories are well below the industry average. Hardo acknowledges that higher interest rates might eventually put a dent in sales of all vehicles, but he says it hasn't happened yet. Customers are still snatching up cars that were hard to find when the pandemic was crippling supply chains. Andy says the public remains intrigued by the EV market.
Our surveys to date have showed a pretty significant chunk of the American car buying public who are interested in buying electric vehicle are curious about buying electric vehicle.
It's just an open question of when a lot of these consumers will take the plunge as more EV models come on board. Hardo's analysis finds that 70% of EV sales this year are from just nine models, all of which have a starting price under $45,000 when factoring in incentives. That's below the average new vehicle price. He suggests those models can be competitive sales-wise, as opposed to higher-priced luxury EVs. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Find our rate trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5, The Tap.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I am your host, Charlie Behrens, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Folks, welcome to the Cripescast. Today, my guest is Ed the Diver. I've been a big fan of Ed the Diver since I first saw his stuff. He basically scuba dives around Wisconsin lakes, Midwest lakes, and he cleans them up. He finds fishing lures, cell phones, plastic, anchors, whatever. He gets them out of our waterways, and then the lures he resells. The bottles and whatnot he collects, the plastic and the cans he recycles. He's just a great guy. And what I love about him is he's showing sort of the problem, I guess, with a lot of what we're doing, you know, as far as pollution goes, but also the solution. And, you know, it's easy for anybody to do. We don't necessarily need to wait for other people to do it for us, or the government to do it for us, or, you know, that's all nice stuff to have. But in the today, what can we do today? We can just clean up on our own and hope that everybody's little bit goes a long way. So I'm very excited to talk with Ed the Diver. We had a great conversation, and I think you guys will enjoy it. But before we get to that, joined in the studio by Colleen Coco Morocco, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Executive producer of the Cripescast.
How you been?
I've been good. How about you?
Good.
You just went somewhere. You went to Canada.
I did. And it was really great. There was tons of elk.
Yeah. You see a bunch of elk?
Lots of elk. Honestly, it's so hot here that I welcomed the change. I don't have AC in my apartment. So I was like, you know what? I wouldn't mind sleeping in 30 degrees.
There's an AC unit down in the basement. You can take.
I have a unit in my like room, but my whole apartment, like my kitchen, living room, it's just like really hot. And I remember one time I tried to get the AC unit from you, and you said it's really heavy. I don't want you putting it in because then I'll be liable.
Okay, so I'm sure people in the audience can relate to this. Put the craziest thing that's allowed to be like an average user person is an in-window AC unit, because it's so back heavy. It's so heavy to the part that's going out the window.
Yeah. And I'd rather it smush my foot rather than like someone below.
I know. Well, I've dropped one before. And also you can I've sliced my hand on the back of it because those grates are super.
That's what you told me too.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm an idiot and I messed it up. And I know you enough to know that you're not that much smarter than me.
You're going to say, I want you to say, and you're an idiot.
Nope, I wasn't going to say that. I'm saying I'm an idiot, but I just don't know how much smarter than me you are.
You also, I mean.
Oh, all right. See, you know what? I'm just going to hold it for the rest of the time.
Do you see how fidgety you are?
No, I see that that this system this is not a good system. I'm going to fix this after, but the fact that like you can't twist these microphones, we can cut this part out. We're getting a new system.
Do you see how I haven't had a single problem with my microphone?
I use mine 10 times as much as you use yours.
I'm just saying, like, I'm not out here touching it all the time. Just, like, sitting, fidget with
I like
this.
Touching my microphone.
Okay.
I'm a fidgeter.
Yeah.
Do you think we're going to fix my decades of fidgeting? Well,
I'll get you like a fidget cube. Or like one of those
little
things.
Spinner.
That's what I should have got you. There were the Canadian fidget cubes. like in Canada. Instead, I did get him a gift. Do you have it on you or did you?
No, I don't. It's a, she got me a knife that says Charles and it's very cool. And it says Jasper, Canada.
Yep.
So that was awesome.
Yeah. It was very great.
Thank you for that knife.
Yeah.
You're welcome. And yeah, back to the AC unit.
Yeah. It's already mid August at this point. Just sweat it out.
Yeah. Just sweat it out. But I'm amazed that they, that those AC units that they, there's gotta be an easier way to do air conditioning.
Well, so the one that I have in my room is one of those portable ones.
Oh, yeah.
So like the only thing that's actually in the window is like a slat of metal and then it hooks up to a tube.
And
it takes up some space in my room, which it's fine. I have the space, but it would be not, there are also sleeker options for the window unit, but then it doesn't get the room as cold. So
yeah, I guess that's true. Well,
but you were like, yeah, pay me $1 for it so that I'm not liable. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that sounds like something I would say. Yeah.
Anyway,
do things by the books here, ladies and gentlemen.
That was the week when I was gone. How was it here? What'd you do?
It was awesome. Just worked. That was it.
It was awesome?
It was awesome. It was fine. No, just every day being alive is awesome, Colleen. Thank you. We did miss you very much, so. All right, folks. Well, that's pretty much it for our chit-chat here. And we are going to get to my conversation with Ed the Diver. So I found your stuff originally on Instagram. I think actually somebody sent it to me and said, you got to collab with this guy. And I went and looked up, you know, what you were doing, and you were scuba diving through Wisconsin's lakes, Wisconsin's rivers, and you were finding just all this trash. But within the trash, a lot of fishing lures, some really cool ones that kind of got me going. But bikes, you found handcuffs, you found like old CDs, you found pornos from back in the day, you know, yeah. All this stuff people are phones, all this stuff that people are throwing in rivers. What is that? What did you just hold up there?
The one of four hard drives that I found so far.
It's a hard drive. Have you plugged it in?
It's wrecked. You can't plug it. I just got this up in Kingsford, Michigan, Aurora, Michigan. And we had to call the cops because we found some other stuff that I can't say yet until I'm cleared. But we find a lot of cool stuff.
Well, that's another thing, man. I mean, you're helping the police. I've seen you work with the police many times. You're helping them solve stuff. From an environmental perspective, I think what you're doing is kind of the most important in my mind, because you're really taking people underwater, you're scuba diving, you're showing them just all this stuff that we are, you know, contributing to sort of the ecosystem and that, you know, sort of the pollution that's down there. So I think it's very cool, man. I applaud you, and your videos are a lot of fun. With that big long intro established, how did you start? How did you get into this?
Well, it all started bringing my kids fishing for walleye, you know, up in Marinette, Menominee River, the Fox River. You know, you got shoulder to shoulder people, and then you try to get your kids in there to fish, and they don't know what they're doing. So you're ticking people off. But they lose your lures. They lose my lures. So you go from a full tackle box to barely anything at all. So I decided, hey, I want to get my lures back. And so when the water warmed up, I went out there in shorts or waders, whatever it was, and start picking them up, get my lures, and then I'd start seeing other lures everywhere, and I'd start picking those up, and it just snowballed after that. I got a boogie board, I went underwater, started collecting, filling the whole boogie board up, and then I got a basket, and I got scuba certified, and it just blew up.
Yeah, you know, I got scuba certified myself earlier this year. I still have to finish editing it, but I was doing an environmental thing down in the Bahamas, and that's where I got certified. And that was such a cool experience, something that was on the bucket list forever. But I always thought about, you know, when you think of scuba, you think about doing it down there or something, you know, but doing it up here, doing it in the lakes, certainly not something you always think about. What's it like scuba diving up here versus maybe somewhere more tropical or like an ocean or something?
So I've been down to the Bahamas 2 years ago. I went down 100 feet, saw a shipwreck, two plane wrecks. Awesome. Thing is, you can't touch anything. You can't grab anything. I, myself, I'm a grabber. I got to be picking up cell phones. I got to be finding bottles or whiskey jugs.
Wow, look at that one.
But yeah, you, I mean, you'll find you find all that stuff. And I like cleaning up and I like collecting stuff, you know, beer cans and, you know, safes, treasure chest. Just found this yesterday, a Triceratops. But yeah, you never know what you'll find. Rings, but lived in Minnesota.
Wow, and, that is a jewelry box.
Jewelry box, yeah. Stolen.
Stolen, you said?
Yep.
How do you know it was stolen?
Well, I find a lot of stuff off of bridges, bikes especially, when I'm cleaning bikes off, cell phones. That's just random stuff that people, you know, they steal it. They grab the goods out of it. They throw the evidence in the water like that. I found a pillowcase. It's tied shut with a bunch of jewelry in it. And I found the owner of that here in Marinette, Wisconsin. So
there's really?
So many stories that people tell me. Handcuffs, the ones I found in Rhinelander. There's a story behind that. The guy bought them on Amazon. He thought
whoa,
he didn't.
Whoa. What kind of erotic stuff was that fell into?
I don't know. You know, let me grab them really quick here.
Are they pink?
No, they're not pink. They're like, they're hinge handcuffs, like the ones I had for my law enforcement training.
Okay.
This guy was a security guard and he said they didn't work. So he chucked them in the water. He told me this after he saw my video. And I said, hey, they work just fine. You know, I greased them up. And he doesn't want them back, so they're mine.
Wow. No shade on the security guard, but is that like a, are people throwing this stuff in the water actually just to get rid of it a lot of times?
It's been like that for a long time. You know, our rivers used to be, there used to be dumps right next to rivers in the old days. Like a lot of these bottles would go flying in the river and then they just sit there for 100 years or maybe more, maybe less. And some of them are worth some money. This one here is worth about $50, just this one bottle. But it's not just finding the cool stuff. We're always grabbing the trash too. Broken bottles, you know, rubber, fishing line. And we find crayfish and fish that are tangled in line. We find fish that are hooked on lures and stuck to a log and they're swimming in circles. And they just sit there to die. So we get to free them and stuff. So give them a second chance. It's an awesome feeling.
Yeah, that is a really great feeling. And I think... you know, one of the things that we should touch on is obviously you're finding all these lures at the bottom of the drink, and I've seen you pull it up, and it's kind of tangled in weeds and line, and it's just a mountain.
Like this. Yeah, you find it big.
Exactly. That's yep. It. And when that's sort of the what we've kind of turned a lot of our lakes into, it's sort of a catch-22, a big reason that people love the outdoors and want to protect the outdoors is because of fishing. However, fishing is also creating sort of some damage to a degree that at least we've got to like acknowledge. What are you seeing the real damages from fishing, and how can people fish better, and how can people be more you know, nobody wants to hurt fish, you know, right. I mean, unless we're, you know, going to eat them, but it doesn't do anybody good for the hobby to hurt them. So how can people fish better?
So when I'm out in the banks or in the water, the banks are just trashed with a fishing line. I mean, every couple of feet, you see a big wad of fishing line that only not hurts the water life, but also, you know, ducks or birds on the shoreline collecting stuff. They get all tangled up and they can end up dying too, but underwater, it's everywhere. And when people are fishing is an addictive habit to some people. Some guys will come up here and throw $300 worth of lures out in the same spot. They'll keep losing them one after another, thinking that there's a huge fish out there, but it's just a log or a rock. And when they keep doing that, every lure gets stuck in there, then all the line floats downstream. Then they keep doing it again, all the line floats downstream, and then it creates a snag further down the stream. Or the guy next to him, and it just keeps building up. Crazy. And a channel in the Fox River by Voyager Park there, I spent about four dives cleaning this big section up in the center of the channel, just like thousands of fishing lines and lures all tangled up in there from over the years. And I was able to clean it out and create less snags for all the anglers there.
That's awesome, man. So, I mean, really, I guess maybe the takeaway would be, if you get snagged once, don't give it another go. There, it's, you know, it's not a big fish. It's a big log or something.
Yeah, I mean, maybe three times, but some guys will sit there and throw $300 worth of ripping wraps or stick baits, whatever they're throwing out there. And they think they're going to overcome it. but they just keep losing over and over again. And then they end up coming up by me and my trailer to buy more lures for cheaper because they're all recycled. And then they go throw them away again. They don't feel as bad because they save money on them.
Yeah. Yeah. That is. So the, aside for that, though, I mean, there's really not a good way to fish in a more eco-friendly way that you're, I mean, aside for cleaning it up or getting in on a dive to help clean up what we've put out mm-hmm. there. And by the way, I include myself in this. I've lost more than my fair share of lures. I've gone in after a bunch of them, but I mean, certainly not all of them. I'll tell you that much.
Well, it's tough. In the spring, the current's just ripping. So it's cold. You know, you can't just hop in there. You'll get swept downstream or, you know, die. Yeah. There's a lot in these rivers, low visibility is unknown. Even when in this time of year, there's snapping turtles, you know, cruising around. There's huge sturgeon swimming around. And when you can only see sometimes a foot to 3 feet and a big snapper or a big sturgeon swims right by you, you wet yourself.
Yeah.
It's fun though. And I love getting on video. I just almost yesterday, I went to grab a bottle of Niagara. I seen the bottle. I reached for it. And all of a sudden I noticed there's a big snapper head right next to my hand. And I didn't see the snapper. He didn't budge. He blinked. And I pulled my hand back and I could have lost my fingers. It was really close.
Well, that's the lakes here, we don't have sharks, obviously. We don't have a lot of the things that people are concerned about in the Caribbean or down in Florida or whatever. But snappers, is that the big one here? Is that the one you'd be most concerned about?
I've never had any problems. I've seen a bunch up close. It was face to face, and then we both go our different ways. We freak each other out. But I say beaver. I'd never want to run into an angry beaver. You know, they're out in the, you're in their territory. I've heard, and if they're chewing down trees, what can they do to you? You know, if they don't like, yeah, you're in their territory.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they can be mean little guys outside of the water, you know, inside. Good Lord. Were they home turf? Come on.
Yeah, but northern pikes, muskie, yeah, I can swim right up to them sometimes. But most of the time they see you, they're gone before you see them.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see one of those suck. I wouldn't be so concerned about those. Those never bite on anything I throw. Well, a pike does, but not a muskie, you know.
Muskie are hard to get.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a blast, and there's so many places to go. Every day I get about four people begging me to go to their location, whatever part of the state, their city, their lake, their river, and to dive and say, hey, let me know when you're coming here. And I just say I can't keep track of anybody anymore. You know, if I show up there, I'll make an announcement, I'm heading there. I can't write down every day like all this list of names of people that I have to get hold of when I go to their town. It's just impossible.
I think that's really cool. I just kind of want to put a button on this fishing thing. Is there anything that, you know, aside for throwing a bunch of times, is there anything people can do, like a typical fisher, your average fisher, is there anything they can do to make it more, just make it better for the environment? Is it give it a few more goes before you just cut the line? If you snap the line, try to go in after it. Like, what would you recommend? Because you're right. You don't want people to go risk their lives for a $20 lure. That's not worth it. Unless you're my dad talking to me, then absolutely it's worth it. Get your ass in the water.
No, it starts at the bank. Don't throw your lure containers on the banks. Don't leave your line in the banks, your bags, your soda cans, beer cans, whatever you got. If you bring it in, take it out. Losing your lures in the water, you can't help it. You know, some people will sit and try for a couple seconds and just yank and yank and then just snap it or cut it because they're in a hurry to catch that fish. So put a new lure on. But yeah, there's different methods. You know, I think it's called like the bow method or the slingshot method where you're pull tension, you pull your line out and let it go. The lure is just stuck on the edge of the rock, a hook is. So then when you do the slingshot method, it pops off and then floats down. If it's stuck on a log, it's most likely going to be stuck there for good.
Yeah.
But a lot of lures I find, they're just laying behind a rock, a foot or two behind the rock because they get slingshotted back and they're just sitting there.
Ah, interesting. Okay. I know that method, and it's kind of like the fly fishing thing where you just snap and it... And then just gets a little untensioned, If that's a word, and then boom, you're back at it. Okay. Well, that's good advice there. That, and especially keeping those banks clean. Cool. I'm curious, what is the biggest thing you've ever found?
Well, I found a, my instructor showed me a car out in the bay here, the Bay of Green Bay. But besides that, that was already there, that was known about, I find a lot of bikes, a lot of rims. We just found a huge semi rim. And we couldn't even lift it. The thing was so heavy. But I filled my kayak up with a lot of big stuff, tires. Yeah, I think mostly the car parts are the biggest things, and bicycles.
And what year are the bicycles? Like, what's the era when people are using the river as a bicycle dump?
Oh, they still do. You know, every year bikes get stolen. People will go for a joyride, toss off the bridge. And like police have, they had keep records of stolen bikes. So sometimes I like let the police know. But a lot of the times they're so covered in zebra mussels, or they're destroyed from the water, the zebra mussels. You can't tell what they were. There's, you know, safes. I got a safe right here. It's kind of heavy. I don't want to shake the table. There's a small one here. They check. I called the cops. They checked the serial numbers yesterday. Found a safe. I can't really say much more about it, but that's under investigation. And we found a bunch of other questionable stuff. That stuff is heavy. When you're underwater, people just scuba dive recreationally. They don't want to work. They don't want to be lifting stuff up, going up and down, getting all dirty on the bottom of the river, getting all mucky, stinky. But that's what I do. And I love doing it. And I love cleaning it up, love finding the treasures and the trash.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. And with how deep are you typically going?
So my average depth for the cleanup dives is about right from shore. So 1 to 2 feet down about 12, 14 feet.
12, 14 foot. So doing that decompression, there's not a whole lot you got to do there.
No. So I'm up and down anyway. So I'm not down there, down at 10, 12 feet for more than 5 minutes at a time. I mean, anchors, sometimes you got to really twist like the anchor ropes that they got a bunch of lures stuck on them. But Fox are known for that. One dive, I got 27 anchors out in 2 hours. So I was pulling up two at a time, and they got lines, they got the rope and all lures. So you're pulling them up to throw them in your kayak, and you just got to really be careful to not get hooked with those ropes as you're coming up.
So, I mean, that's incredible. So you have all this stuff, and you've created sort of a secondary business. You have the business, I suppose, of putting this stuff on social media and whatever you can kind of get from that. But then I would assume maybe your primary or secondary business here is reselling all this stuff.
I make my own merchandise. This I don't sell, but I sell them with my logo, shirts, hats. I take lures and paint my logo on them. And I resell those too as keychains or as lures. So, and then I do recoveries. People call me when they drop their keys or their cell phones or their wedding rings. I just found 3 wedding rings last week, and then we found this extra one that was not on our list.
Wow.
So,
yeah. Hey, where did you find that?
That was at White Potato Lake.
Oh, I think I lost one like that a while back, dude. That's awesome you found that. That's sweet. Yeah, you can just mail that to me.
Apparently, it was appraised at $2,500 at the jewelry store.
Wow. So what are you going to do? Do you sell that as well, or do you wait for someone to say, hey, that's mine?
I don't sell them, just like these Apple Watches. I haven't sold any Apple Watches, no phones. These still work. These don't work, but this is my museum now. They're staying here, and I have had people contact me 6-7 months after I found stuff and said, hey, I saw your video last year. I lost this at here, and I see that you were there. And if it works, I can, I say, hey, what was on the screen, of your Apple Watch? And they tell me, and I say, okay, I'll know it's yours if you know the passcode. They tell me the passcode. If it works, it's yours. And I send it back to them.
So free of charge,
free of charge.
Oh, man, what are you? What's wrong? What's going on? What do you guys sell that, dude? Come on, make some money. I'm kidding with you. That's really awesome of you. That's super cool.
It's not about the money. I just feel blessed to be able to give people hope, help them out. But I do charge people. You know, if someone calls me and says, hey, I just dropped my keys in the marina, I need them right now. I'm like, okay, what I charge, I can be there right now. Okay, I'll pay it. Come on over. So that's how I make money, too, is recoveries. But not everything that I find is I'm getting money for. So it's just a lot of different, you know, I can make that own choices myself. And, you know, do I want to donate my time or do I need money to pay bills, which I do. So I got to charge.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. Now, look, besides that safe that you found, what's the craziest thing you've gotten under there? What's the most mysterious? You know, what's the unsolved murder that we got to figure out here?
Can I show a gun on here?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Show a gun. Whoa, shock. Oh, that's a rifle. Old Henry?
A Winchester, Model 94.
Oh, it's a Winchester. Look at that.
And it was wrapped in plastic, really tight, and electrical tape. And I called the Marinette County Sheriff's Department. They took it, investigated it, couldn't find any crimes committed with it, so they gave it back to me. Here's the evidence tag.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. What year is that rifle?
They told me 1941, so right before World War II, they made them.
Oh, my God. And what kind of condition is it in, given that it was underwater but also wrapped?
Kind of rusty. It could be restored. I had a lot of people offer to restore it, a lot of gunsmiths and stuff. But I just want to keep it the way it is, and I don't want to let it go and lose it.
Yeah, man, that is really cool. Kind of gotta wonder, you know, how that thing got in the river, don't you? You know, probably 1941. Where did you find it again?
In the Menominee River. Just so Menominee River is 1 minute from my house. It goes out in the bay right here, the Bay of Green Bay, and it goes all the way up, you know, past Niagara, Iron Mountain. So I dove most of the spots, you know, at the Four Seasons here, north of here, Niagara, Iron Mountain. And there's so much history in there, you know, like old medicine bottles. You got soda bottles, beer bottles, whiskey jugs, and you got guns, phones, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you're just finding history, man. Now, aside for the cool things you found, what's kind of maybe like the not so cool? Like, what's would you say is the biggest polluter of the rivers and the lakes?
So yesterday, I just found a big car battery. Those don't belong in the water.
Oh, for God's sakes. Are you serious?
Car battery, found a heavy sewing machine. That's not going to hurt anything, really. But yeah. And then a couple months ago, I found another car battery. I think it fell out of a boat when it tipped over. And then you find all kinds of other batteries. Cell phones, you know, they got the lithium batteries in there, or whatever kind of batteries. And, you know, I whenever I find them, sometimes they get expanded or they're leaking. So you just try to get them out of there before they pollute the water.
What about plastic? Is there, I know obviously you're dealing with a lot of things sunk to the bottom, but are you seeing a lot of plastic floating around?
A lot of plastic on the bottom, you know, Gatorade bottles or soda bottles, any stuff like that. And then, of course, stuff that's floating around on top. I always grab that when I see it. Sometimes you get little coves where there's no current and you see a couple bottles floating around in there. Always grab those. But it's just lead. Get a lot of lead, and those old lead spiders. I think they used to call them for snagging salmon back in the day.
Yeah,
find a lot of those. Sometimes you'll go down by a dam and just see a huge pile of lead, like that wide, that tall, that the current I'll put there, and I just get as much as I can out of there.
Yeah, lead obviously is a huge issue, even within fishing and fishing lures, because, you know, we actually had some folks from Get the Lead Out, and they're looking to transition all of the fishing gear from lead to tungsten, just because the birds eat the lead, and then that kills the birds, especially loons being one of them. What are you finding a lot of lead in? When you resell lures, are you conscious of the lead thing? Are you reselling lead lures? Have you thought about that whole deal?
I haven't really thought about that too much for reselling, but all I know is that when I'm selling locally here, I'm right back out there to find it and clean it up again. I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of jigs that I find. I find thousands of jigs between here and the Fox River alone every spring, every year. And they're really not worth my time to recycle and resell. So I've got big piles of ones with like rusty hooks that I'll end up recycling someday to make, you know, dive weights or to make other things.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I can't control that really. I mean, I could keep it out, but you know, it also helps me keep going, and it's my goal to go back and get it again.
Well, the other thing is jigs are one of the bigger lures using lead. I don't know how many, you know, Rapalas and all those have lead in them. I don't think they do.
Like, do use chicken wraps. They have lead.
Oh, sure. Yep. Yeah, one of those ice fishing rigs. Yep.
Blade baits have lead on them, like right here. These got lead on, or maybe that one doesn't, but yeah, they are lead. There's lead on these Cabela's Mean Ice. And then a lot of the other ones have lead on them. You can see the lead through the paint there.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question too of it, you know, and not even an answer I know for sure is how dangerous is lead when it's not in sort of like sinker form, you know, when that's what those birds are eating, but how much of it leaches off the lures or whatever, that's an answer I don't have. So.
Oh, either. But I mean, yeah. Those old lead hooks that they used to use for the snagging hooks, those hooks are all rusted off, but the lead is pretty much all there. So I get those out of there, but they don't look like they're too, after being in there for 20, 30, 40 years, they don't look like they're too falling apart. They look pretty old.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
CBS News Special Report. The longtime host of The Price is Right, Bob Barker, is dead at the age of 99. CBS's Steve Kathan looks back at his career.
If someone had told Bob Barker in the 1970s he would wind up hosting The Price is Right for 35 years...
I would never have believed it.
Credit Barker's warmth for his success.
What did you say?
I said, I want to kiss you.
My dear, that can be a... Ooh, wow!
And his hard work. He was famous for prolonging the moment of truth.
I don't know the prices, so I can tease them because I don't know whether they've won or lost.
Barker handed out more than $200 million in cash and prizes during his decades on The Price is Right. But perhaps even more impressive was the enthusiastic devotion he received from fans. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Again, Bob Barker, beloved by millions of television fans for decades, is dead at the age of 99. CBS News Special Report. I'm Allison Keys.
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, Thrivent has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the Central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thrivent.com/disclosure.
Bandana? Check. Boots? Check. Gloves? Check. As a motorcycle rider in Wisconsin, you may go to great lengths to protect your image. Just be sure you're protecting yourself, too. Wear a Department of Transportation-approved helmet. Perform safety checks on your motorcycle. Know the traffic laws and don't take risks. Motorists and motorcyclists can work together to achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roads. Zero in Wisconsin. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov.
Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886. And tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Hey folks, I'm Charlie Behrens, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Cripes Cast. This is my conversation with Ed the Diver. Let's kind of go to the origin story, you know, and where did this all it started when you were fishing with your kids and you just went in to get those lures and found another and another. To make this your full time, I assume this is your full-time gig now, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh. So how long did it take from that origin of you just trying to get your lures back to this becoming your full-time job? Take us through that.
So about a year after I started doing this, I was thinking, hey, I should get a wetsuit, you know, and stay warmer underwater. I can get in the water sooner, in the cold water. So I did that. Then I ended up getting a GoPro and then an attachment. I started recording it, started editing it, and posting stuff on my Facebook. And then I started a YouTube channel, and the YouTube really didn't take off too much, but I had a lot of people that started watching and would encourage me and love what I was doing. I had a DNR agents contacting me saying, hey, we love that you're cleaning up. Thank you for what you're doing. But then I started making more channels on TikTok, which I had for the last couple of years. I've got like 130,000 followers almost on there. And we used to do a lot of live shows right here, but I kind of don't have time anymore. But I did this for about 3.5 years, 4 years while I was quite a full-time job. I was doing underground electric. So that was my pillow, insurance, all that stuff.
You were doing, I'm sorry, underground electric?
Yep. We were contracted to work for We Energies, Wisconsin Public Service. So I was an operator, you know, I was digging holes. I was terminating transformers, panels, all this stuff, different stuff, our meters. But I just, like, my body, I'm getting older. I had 3 hernia surgeries. My back is sore. My hands are sore. So I'm like, I can't do this the rest of my life. I got to have a different plan. So that's, I built my business up here, my following, advertisement. And that's, I've been doing this for almost 9 months now, full time. And I've had TV show opportunities, a lot of news stuff, newspapers, podcasts, Charlie Behrens. That is top notch right there.
Oh, come on, dude. No. You've got so much cool stuff going on. That's awesome. I would love to get out with you and do a dive at some point. I've got my certification and yeah. I would love to, do that. I thinking of the bodies of water going around, what is there a, there's a lot of challenging bodies of water here in the Midwest. I mean, especially when you get into the Great Lakes, those currents are no joke. Mm-hmm. Have you encountered some sort of scary moments either in the rivers or in the lakes or anything like that?
I stay out of the Great Lakes. There's so much stuff to find just here, like on land, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois. I'm heading to Illinois today. I'm going to dive down there tomorrow morning. But there's so much stuff just here. And in the Great Lakes or in huge bodies of water, the zebra mussels seem to take everything over. So you can't really see much that's been there for a while. But, up here in the rivers and lakes, it's easier. There's less danger. But when I dive by dams, I got to be really careful for fishing line that could tangle you up or currents that could, you know, push you where you don't want to go. And if it looks dangerous, I don't go in there. If I'm comfortable with it, and I know I'll be safe, I'll do it. But a lot of it's unknown. Like, you just slowly creep into this low visibility spot and you go deeper and deeper. You're just waiting for a big sturgeon to come past your face, or a snapping turtle, or a big bass to come by you because they're curious and they want you to feed them. So there's all kinds of different factors. But only once was I kind of worried where the current kind of took me. But I knew what was there beyond it, but it kind of swept me up a little bit. And it kind of shook me up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, diving is just one of those activities where you just always have to be very alert, very conscious, and
yeah, just aware of your surroundings and not just that, but the currents and what's above you, what's around you. So you have a very unique perspective on seeing zebra mussels. And I think that's an important environmental thing that is often overlooked because it's at the bottom of our bodies of water. What does that look like when zebra mussels sort of take over in a body of water?
Well, they're just, if there's not muck, they're zebra mussels. Anything that's sticking out of the muck, you know, whether it be bicycles, anchors, rocks, Apple Watches, or anything that's sticking up out of the muck, they're zebra mussels. And I try my best because I'm always in the bottom of these rivers and lakes where there's zebra mussels. So every new place I'm going, I'm cleaning out my gear, my kayak or my boards, my wetsuit, my suit to make sure I don't have any of that stuff to transfer it over to the next body of water. In reality, it's already there. Zebra mussels are in pretty much every body of water I've been to.
It's a tough one. Yeah, they're one of the an invasive species. And but yeah, it just goes to the importance of cleaning out your boat from lake to lake.
Yeah. And like I always wear gloves because the moment you don't wear gloves and you're trying to clean up, those zebra mussels are like knife blades. They cut your fingertips, your hands, and then it really hurts when you're done and they take days to heal up. So gloves are, I'm always going through a lot of gloves. They get all torn up and I spend another 50, 70 bucks on a new pair.
Can you get a pair of like armored gloves for those snapping turtles so they don't necessarily take a finger off?
Oh yeah, that was so scary yesterday. I just posted a video on my Facebook of when it happened. I gotta get this out. Yeah, I almost lost my finger on tube magnets that slammed on my pinky the day before. Then yesterday I went to reach for that bottle and that snapper was right there just watching my hands. And I had my fingers are showing because there's a hole in my fingertips. So I had a black glove with like little pink things going past the turtle's face. I'm surprised.
Yeah. I am too.
One of those moments like, you know, that could have been really, really bad. So he's a cool turtle and I'm thankful for that. He spared me.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, this dude's. He's like, why am I going to bite the hand that cleans up my room? Where do you want to take this? What's your dream? Are you currently living the dream? Do you have sort of like a plan beyond what you're currently doing?
Yeah. So I wanted my end goals, not my end goal, but my next goal is to do a TV show. I just got called by a producer that is interested in what I'm doing. He's talked about doing a season with me. I was just on another TV show, or a couple of them. I got two episodes with his channels.
Yeah.
We just did that, but that won't air till like March or April.
And what channel are we talking about?
He has a bunch of channels, but he's on his networks are like Bally. Is that Bally?
Bally, yep.
And then Fox Sports, I think he said, and then NBC. There's a bunch of different networks that he has, five or six channels or shows that he runs, and then they're on all these different networks. Yeah, but he came here to do one episode, and after the dive, they had like five cameras everywhere, including mine. Then they came to my house, and they were just like, "We're gonna have to do another episode on this." So
just on the house, yeah.
So they interviewed me, and then interviewed some of the people that sponsor me, support me, at some of the businesses locally here. So that was really cool to get them in there too to support them. But as far like I want to do a TV show, my own TV show. And right now I'm so bombarded. I'm about 23 videos behind of my own editing for YouTube. And I mean, I have a lot of footage, a lot of cool stuff, but I've been getting people that want me to advertise for them, make videos for their companies for environmental stuff. So I have all these opportunities, but it's just me and my buddy Jason who helps with lures and cleanup. But I've got all this administrative stuff, all the advertising, marketing, merchandise, video editing, of course. It's crazy. Can't keep up.
I mean, that's a good place to be in, a tough place to be in. I think it's sort of the behind the scenes of like people making their own content. Ryan experiences that, you know, I've experienced that. How are you dealing with kind of the stress of like having this great opportunity yet not enough hours in the day? How are you handling that? Oh, little beer from the 1940s, old Milwaukee, little 40s old Milwaukee suds. There you go.
Well, that's, yeah. You know what? You have a creative mind. So, you know, you got to shut it down when you wake up and just start working all day, 12, 14 hours. You got to have a shutdown point. Play guitar, harmonica, a little piano, drums, penny whistle, my hands. whatever, just a lot of
nice. I could tell by those, just that initial second of the loon is that, I mean, that's one horny loon. I'll tell you that right now. So good for you, man.
I got
good for you. Yeah. I don't even know if loons call for mating. I think it's actually usually to see where their kids are or if they're in distress. I think if they see an eagle, you know,
yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know enough about loon calls. So you're thinking would like, it's kind of crazy thinking too of like where you can go and how you can grow. Is TV the way to grow these days? Or is it, you know, building social media platforms? You know, I mean, kind of media is changing right from under our noses every day, you know?
Well, I'll definitely, this is something I want to try out to do a season. I've got so much support. I already announced on my Facebook that I've got this opportunity without saying names or networks or anything. I said, my dreams are coming true. A producer called me. I mean, you should have seen all the comments and people saying, oh, they should call this or they should just keep Ed the Diver and all this. And like, you're right. You can create your own, you know, social media world through all the channels. But it's like, I need a producer. I need a manager. I need, you know, someone to help me with comments and, you know, advertising. I can't keep up. But I'm overwhelmed, but it's a good thing. But I think I could progress more with help. But of course, help costs money. And I'm just kind of running on my own budget right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it's awesome that you're doing that and that you're building and growing in the way you are. And, you know, it starts to snowball as mm-hmm. you get things taken off and then you can hire more people and all that or have this network come in and help you out. Does the reselling of the lures, is that like a good financial thing or more of a hobby kind of thing?
No, it is good. Someday I want to kind of get away from that more. And I want to maybe just sell them in bundles so people can cut them apart. I've sold one so far. People can just cut them apart at home with their buddies, a couple beers, and find a couple hundred lures in there and whatever mysteries in there.
Ah, but, mystery box, huh?
Yeah. But the lure sales are good for about 6 months. So about 3 months before the walleye run starts and about a couple months after. But probably a 5 month period just slamming. But then the rest of the year dips down. I haven't sold the lure probably in a month or two here. But I've got them on my website. I've got a bunch that aren't even on my website. But this time of year, I just go do a lot of cleanups. I'm not worried about, I'm worried about making money, but I'm not trying as hard. But I do from recoveries, from people swimming, from losing stuff in the waters or boating or tipping over their canoes. So, I mean, that's kind of my thing is recoveries this time of year. And then also just income from social media, advertising.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And do you have sponsors at this point?
I've got people like Ryan. He just I'm selling space on my truck. Meanwhile, in Wisconsin, just made a logo for him. So I've got his logo on there. That's a paid advertisement kind of sponsor thing. And then I've got, you know, other ones that I'm putting up too. So that was just something I started. Now I'm doing advertising on my wetsuit, putting some logos. I got a guy I'm donating gloves with his logos on my gloves. And then he'll keep supplying me gloves because I go through so many. But yeah, it's been taking off and it's crazy. A lot of ideas that I have just come after like one or two beers and I'm like, oh, I should try this out. And it just goes. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I find that too, sort of from a creative standpoint, but like whether you're having a couple beers or you're out biking or just walking, whatever you're doing when your mind just isn't working. Yeah. And then it just allows sort of your thoughts to sort of dissipate and fade away. And then boom, that's sort of where the creativity happens. It's important to make time for that stuff when you're already so busy. It's often difficult, though, at the same time. So what lake do you think we should dive in?
I don't know. I was going to ask you if you wanted me to come down by you or are you by Milwaukee?
Yeah, I'm by Milwaukee. I'm in Milwaukee. I live in Milwaukee. But there's some bridges here that's got a lot of guns underneath them.
I've got magnets, you know, I've got magnets for magnet fishing. We can dive. But I'm always worried about the bigger cities, about coming out with getting hand, mouth and foot disease from all the sewer water draining the rivers, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, that's so. OK, is that a concern? Is that
I've seen like some of the other some of the other divers like jigging with Jordan, the Almighty, and Yappy. I watched them after I started finding stuff and seeing if anybody else is doing it. But I remember they're in a bigger city and they're in this canal and they got kicked out, but they ended up having, they got really sick after being in there because sewer water is draining in and stuff. And it was a bigger city. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, bigger city rivers are dirty. They're like yucky. There's pee and poop in them. And like, I don't want to dive in them. So I was just in the Milwaukee River. I was coming back from Lake Geneva last week and I came up to Grafton, Wisconsin, hopped in the Milwaukee River up there, found a rifle barrel, a bunch of lures, gave some lures to kids, cleaned up a bunch of line and other random stuff. So that was cool.
What could be cool is if we meet kind of in the middle at Lake Winnebago.
That's dirty. Yeah, I was just there. It's green. My buddy, Coots Lures, they run up, they have a huge channel on Facebook and all the other channels. But we met up and did some cleanup. The water was all green, yucky. You can't dive in there right now.
You can't. Yeah, it's nasty as hell, huh?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, and there's many other lakes and, you know, rivers. Right now, my river, you can see about 4 or 5 feet, but sometimes you can only see 6 inches. There's many other rivers around too. It's just once the algae and stuff builds up, like the Fox River, it's green. In the springtime, sometimes it's brown. You can't see nothing.
Yeah. I mean, once you get the sort of phosphorus and then the algae blooms and everything that kills the visibility. So maybe up by you is better.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of the rivers here. Lakes, but I mean, I know by you, I mean, if we just go out of town or meet in the middle somewhere, there's a lot of spots to go
that yeah.
are able to see and find stuff, but bridges are definitely fun. You always find random stuff, you know, safes, guns, you find cell phones, a lot of cell phones, hard drives. So it's pretty exciting.
Have you ever found a safe? The police haven't been able to find who owns the safe and then you get the contents of the safe.
Well, there's the ones I find, there's nothing in them. I've got a safe. I'm going to grab this without shaking the table here. So this is just a smaller safe that I got just nearby my house here. And they forced it open and took the contents and dumped it off the edge of the bridge. I've got one. I just put in the backyard last night. The rest of the safe is still down there because it's too heavy to take. But the door, pretty cool looking, had the key in it and and stuff, but they're heavy.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You never know what you're gonna find under there, and but they're always be empty. And it would be cool to find some like money or you know a gun or something there, but most likely not.
Yeah, you're going for the hidden treasure of the Midwest, you know, a gold mine of lures. Final question for you: what advice would you give to someone who wants to get into doing this?
Be safe is the first thing. Don't just go underwater and take the good stuff. And you gotta grab the Nokias. You gotta grab the broken flip phones and the cracked cell phones and all the trash, you know, cans, bottles, plastic. I've been collecting beer cans, but you gotta take it all. Don't just be choosy and even heavy stuff if you can. Sometimes I have my 40 board. I can't really fit heavy stuff in there, but with my kayak, I can fit like 500-600 pounds worth of stuff in it. So it's like, grab it all. Don't just grab the treasures. Get certified if you can, so you can be safe. Always have tools on you. I've got pliers. I've got a sponsor, Line Cutters. They send me gear and they helps me underwater. I do cleanup, cut line, free underwater life. And they're awesome, awesome sponsors. Yeah. Just encourage people to, get out there, explore, clean up. Don't just give loose hope on people.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.